You are listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm Randall White in for Beth Ruyak. There is a lot of talk about forest management these days, as within the last year alone, several of California's largest and deadliest wildfires have swept through the state. Cap Radio's environment reporter Ezra David Romero has been reporting on calls to increase the use of prescribed burns on forest lands. We spoke with him earlier, and I began by asking how controlled burns work.
Prescribed burns happen in multiple stages. It's not like you just go out and light the forest on fire all of a sudden. There's a process to it. They have to go out and thin the forest first. That's where they mechanically go out and remove trees and brush that's overgrown. So when they light that patch of forest on fire on purpose, it doesn't turn into a wildfire.
And I imagine there's also a lot of factors in play in terms of the weather, how the smoke will stick around, that it's not too windy, et cetera.
Yeah, every prescribed burn or controlled burn has an action plan. They think about everything from the weather that's happening that day. Is there an inversion layer that's going to trap the smoke into this area? Is it in a valley where the smoke can't escape? Or is there a community nearby that will get smoked out if all the weather conditions aren't perfect? So they think about every single detail. And I've tried to go on a number of prescribed burns over the past month, and a number of them I couldn't do every day. I was going to go every day, but they got cut off because the weather conditions weren't perfect.
And now some people are suggesting that prescribed burns may be the solution to California's growing wildfire problem.
Yeah, they're saying not the only solution. It's like a tool in a toolbox of solutions, but it's something that we can do now. You know, we have lighters and matches and things that can light the forest on fire. And I know in light of the mega fires that are happening in California, that might be seen negatively. But under a condition where it's being watched, where they've done forest management in this area, where they've thinned it and they've prepared the area, it could be a viable option.
How do they envision this working? Because right now, as I understand it, the prescribed burns are pretty small. Do they want to expand that?
Yeah, so a number of professors and scientists and forest managers I spoke with would like to expand the size of fires. So right now they're anywhere between like an acre, a quarter of an acre, sometimes even 100 or 200 acres. The one I went on last week was about 50 acres. And they would like to see them happen on a larger scale or just more frequent. And I think when people think of prescribed fires or fires, they think of them all happening at once. They might have a goal of burning 1,000 acres on the Tahoe National Forest, but they might not do it all at the same time. They might do it in chunks when the time is right, when all the weather conditions are right, when it's not too windy, when it's not too hot, when the humidity is higher rather than low, because low humidity dries out fuels, grasses, and things like that.
What are the arguments against this type of forest management?
I think the main thing is smoke. More and more people live in the mountains, live in these forested areas, and they don't want to be smoked out necessarily. And so there's sort of a negative perspective around fires anyways, right? When you see a fire, you think danger. And you see smoke, you think, especially today where we're having these big mega fires or large fires, when you see smoke, you think maybe that's going to come burn my house down. So the thought is to talk to the public beforehand, to educate them, to put signs up on the roads around these areas just to show that this prescribed fire is happening. So I think that's the main concern, is that there's too much smoke and they could maybe jump the lines of the set map of the prescribed burn, right? If the prescribed burn area is the area that's been set up and that's been thinned and all that, if it jumps the line, it could set a fire in the outside area.
And so while we are currently doing these smaller prescribed burns, as you said, they are ramping them up a bit.
Yeah, the Forest Service is doing a lot more prescribed burns. Hugh Safford, he's the regional ecologist for the Forest Service's Pacific Southwest region. That's California, Hawaii, and the Pacific Territories. He said this is the year they've done the most in a very, very long time.
So this year, we actually accomplished more area of prescribed fire than we have for many, many, many years. I think the value I saw in California was about 60,000 total acres on the California National Forest, which, let's be candid, it's a pretty small number, but it's much higher than what we've pulled off in recent years. And so we think that's pretty exciting.
and are supporters of prescribed burns in agreement with him that the 60,000 figure is exciting?
I think they think it's exciting, but they all say more can be done. And what makes it difficult is that, you know, when you see the Sierra Nevada, you see all the trees. I think often people think it's managed by the same group of people, the same agencies. But in fact, it's a very diverse group of people that are running that operation. You have the Forest Service, you have private land, you have state land, you have parks, you have easements and conservancies. And so you have this huge area and a lot of voices going on. So to even do a prescribed burn, you might have to have three or four agencies working together to get one done.
Where do ecologists fall in this debate?
Well, Hugh is one of these ecologists, and they like the idea of prescribed burns. But Hugh does make this point that prescribed burns aren't the one catch-all solutions for preventing major wildfires in California. He says they can help, but they're one tool in the toolbox. So let's hear what he has to say about that.
That prescribed fire on its own will never solve this problem, and it won't even be close. It's a tool that we need to use for a variety of reasons. But really, the major things that have to happen, one, is that we have to start getting serious about using naturally ignited fires under appropriate, safe conditions, of which even under the current climate, there are a lot, way more than we use. And then secondly, we also need to get serious about using, mechanical, sort of human-driven forest treatment as a surrogate wherever we can do it, hopefully followed up by prescribed fire or natural wildfire where possible. But the scale of the problem is absolutely massive. And even if we were to double or triple the amount of prescribed fire we're doing, it wouldn't come close to solving the problem.
When he talks about mechanical treatment of the forest, he's talking about forest thinning, correct?
Yeah, he's talking about forest thinning. That's where either there's hand crews going in and actually like cutting down trees with chainsaws, or they have these giant tractor-like machines that can pick up whole giant 100-foot trees and treat them like toothpicks. And they put them in piles, different piles, like things that can go be turned into boards, things that have to be burned, things that maybe can go to a biomass facility to make energy. And so that's what he's talking about.
Yeah, as I understand it, forest thinning became a tool for the Tahoe Basin to keep another Angora fire from kicking up over the past decade.
Yeah, it's sort of a practice that's used everywhere. You know, I was in the Tahoe National Forest about 3 weeks ago on a ride along, and we saw all this forest thinning happening. But it's also expensive. You're running these giant machines. You're paying contractors to come out to run these machines. You have to figure out what to do with all this resources that you have in big piles now. And you have to figure out what to do with it. Do you leave it and let it dry and burn in a year or two? Do you take it to a biomass facility where they turn it into energy? Those are some questions that are unanswered and sometimes hard to answer because sometimes there's just nowhere to put all that wood.
Is the timber not of the quality that it could be sold on the market to recoup some of those costs?
From what I understand, some of it is and some of it isn't. It depends on if it's like bark beetle infested. And during the drought, we had all those trees that were the millions and millions of trees that were killed because of bark beetles, burrowing into them and basically sucking the life out of these trees. So not all of that wood is salvageable. But even the wood that is, when you see a whole tree, not all of that wood can actually be turned into timber. It has to be of a certain size. And so, limbs and branches and tops and bottoms that don't fit that specifications, they have to figure out something else to do with it.
In addition to the forest thinning and the prescribed burns, are there other tools that people are promoting?
From what I understand, it's mainly forest thinning first and then prescribed burns. But then there's also biomass facilities where they take all that wood stuff and turn it into energy. They burn it, capture that energy, and then you can power homes and things like that with it. And so there's not a lot of biomass facilities in California. And so, for example, on the Tahoe National Forest, for a long time, the nearest biomass facility was like 100-plus miles away. So it wasn't economical to move all that wood stuff that far. And so that's an option, but it's lower on the totem pole, I think, at this point.
Cap Radio's environment reporter Ezra David Romero on the push to increase the use of prescribed burns on forest lands in California. You can hear his full report. It's on our website at capradio.org. And of course, find more information on any topic you hear on Insight by heading to capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Cap Radio. This is Insight.